Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program, everyone. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined tonight by Keith Alexander. It's Saturday evening, February 5th, and we're broadcasting tonight from a submarine. We're in a submarine, and it's traveling whatever river it is that flows through Charlotte, North Carolina. Just kidding. We're in studio tonight in Memphis, unfortunately, because we would have been in Charlotte otherwise. But the American Renaissance Conference was canceled. We'll be talking about that tonight during this first hour. But first of all, welcome once again to the show. It would have been nice if we had some sonar pings there, Keith, and we could have had
get high tech here and get some of these sound effects and things like this.
But we cannot tell a lie. We're at our flagship radio station, as always, AM 1380 WLRM here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. Keith Alexander with me. We're also simulcasting this evening on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. And broadcasting as well to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Got a big show for you tonight, an emotionally charged show. Everyone really up in arms about the injustices that had befallen the 2011 American Renaissance Conference this week. We're going to be talking about that during the first hour. Later tonight, you'll hear from Sheriff Dennis Spruill of Montezuma County, Colorado. Very interesting scenario developing there in Colorado, and the sheriff, the highest elected official in the county, will be joining us to make sense of all that. Capping off tonight's blockbuster show in the third hour, an all-new interview with a fan favorite, a political cesspool throwback, Bob Whitaker, former professor and Reagan administration appointee. Bob Whitaker will be with us during tonight's third hour, so very big show tonight. Keith, glad to have you here with me, my friend.
It's great to be here. And, you know, unfortunately, for the second year in a row now, the Ameren convention has been canceled. We were just reading an article by John Derbyshire about Taylorism, he calls it. And basically, he says that white people like Jared Taylor, and he's probably the personification, like to play by the rules, like to have Jared in particular likes to have a nice, well-dressed group of gentlemen and ladies meet together to discuss just passionately a very unpopular topic, a topic that has been made unpopular by the hard left in America. And unfortunately, they have succeeded in putting this beyond the pale. And if there's any proof that freedom of speech doesn't apply to these areas that the left has staked out as being taboo, this the experience of the Ameren convention over the past 2 years is proof positive that, the left is in charge and that they enforce their heresy. Police get out there and make sure that nothing can be said on certain topics. And, you know, this is just, it's really amazing that the founding stock of America no longer has the right of free speech. If you try to speak up for the interests of those people, then, you know, a sock is stuffed in your mouth, James. You are not going to be able to talk.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be the theme for tonight's first hour. Do paleoconservative European Americans still have the ability to enjoy the most basic freedoms that are guaranteed to us by this country's constitution? Do genteel scholars like Jared Taylor still have the right to free speech, to peaceably assemble, to rent a hotel room and have legally binding contracts honored? We will explore that and examine that question during tonight's first hour. By the way, folks, as we're just getting started here, don't forget that we are in the Political Cesspool Council of Conservative Citizens virtual fan party and online chat. If you want to sound off about the injustices that have befallen American Renaissance this week, join us in the Political Cesspool chat room at cfcc.org. That's the Council of Conservative Citizens website, cfcc.org. Join us in the chat and have your say. We are, without a doubt, the only mainstream broadcast entity in the country that is going to be taking an objective look at some very flagrant civil rights violations this week in happened in Charlotte. But first, to give this story a little depth, to offer you a conflicting perspective, let's go first to Ohio, where Governor John Kasich, the former Fox News analyst, now governor, appointed a black man to his cabinet. Now, here's the story. Blacks have been raising all kinds of trouble because the new governor of Ohio hadn't appointed any of them to his cabinet, which is pretty stupid. John Kasich is a Republican. 90% of blacks vote Democrat. That's just a fact. First off, it would be stupid for Kasich to reward a group of people who so consistently vote against his party. Of course, most Republicans do it all the time, like George Bush did. That's because rewarding your base for supporting you, the standard rule of politics, doesn't apply to Republicans because their voters are white. So does Kasich tell these so-called civil rights leaders something like, hey, if blacks want positions in my cabinet, you should have voted for me, not for my opponent, by a 9-to-1 margin. If you want seats in GOP cabinets, then start voting Republican. Of course he didn't say that. That would be racist, quote unquote. Second, when 90% of a group votes Democrats, it's obvious that there aren't going to be very many black Republicans among them who are qualified to serve in a cabinet-level position. But never mind any of that. Never mind common sense. John Kasich doesn't want to be called a racist. So he appointed a black man to his cabinet the other day. And, Keith, he named Michael Colbert, the black man. He named him
Director of the Department of Job and Family.
There it is. He appointed this guy as the director of the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. And, of course, Keith, if there's anything that black Americans are experts on, it's holding down a job and raising a decent family. So it makes sense that he was appointed to that by Kasich. Anyway, the point of the matter is this. Here is just today's example of white Republicans bending over backwards to accommodate minorities who have never supported them, never voted for them, will never support conservative ideology, and will never be pulling the lever in favor of the GOP. Examples of like this are a dime a dozen. They happen every day all over the country. They are too numerous to count. This is what white men do when they are elected to seats of power. Now let's travel from Ohio to Charlotte, North Carolina, where the pro tem mayor of Charlotte is Patrick Cannon. Keith, how does Patrick Cannon use his seat of power?
Well, what Patrick Cannon is a black man. Charlotte is probably one of the most liberal areas in the South. It's in it's one of the points on the so-called Golden Triangle, where they have some little town that they say is an acronym for relocation area for transplanted Yankees or something. But nonetheless, what he does, he immediately gets on the horn when he finds out that this racist group, quote-unquote, Ameren, is going to have a convention in his city and starts calling every one of the hotels trying to get them to not book him in.
We've got to take a break there. That commercial break, we're so amped up, the commercial snuck up on us. Stay tuned, folks. We're going to dive into the Ameren debacle right after this.
When the truth is found to be.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here this evening, hosting the first hour of tonight's live installment of the Political Cesspool Radio program. And we have a great show for you tonight. If you have not yet joined us in the Political Cesspool Council of Conservative Citizens online chat and virtual fan party, we invite you to do so right now. If you're not tuned in to one of the AM/FM affiliates of this station, you're listening online, the chat room is the place to be. To join us there, simply go to cfcc.org. That is www.cofcc.org. cfcc.org. Join the chat. We'll see you there. This is your place to sound off on the travesty that occurred to the American Renaissance Conference just this week. Of course, as you know now, and we were under the impression last week, Sam Dixon and Richard Spencer was my guest. The odds were at that time that an alternate venue would be found. The conference would go on. Obviously, you know now that it did not. The conference has been canceled, and we are talking now about some of the aspects that have surrounded this for the last week. First segment, we talked about John Kasich, the Ohio governor, who is doing as all nominally conservative Republicans do. He is bending over backwards at his own expense and to his own detriment to diversify his cabinet, rewarding people who have never supported the party, never promoted conservative ideology. This, unfortunately, is this self-destructive gene that modern-day European Americans have coming back into play. On the other hand, as we found out in Charlotte, North Carolina, when you have a black American ascend to a high position of power, he has a very tribal mentality. He's going to look out for his people and only his people. He's going to break the rules, and he's going to do whatever it takes to see that his agenda is advanced. And as you know, Patrick Cannon, the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, did something that many legal scholars believe is an actionable offense. He used his position as mayor to call and intimidate hotels not to host the conservative American Renaissance gathering that was to have been held this week. Now, when cornered by the news, he said, no, he didn't pressure the hotels. He simply called the employees of the hotels and told them not to hold the conference. I don't know exactly how much that absolves him, Keith, but nevertheless, the point is, the theme is this hour, do paleoconservative European Americans, are they still entitled to the most basic of civil liberties, free speech, peaceful assembly, and the right to rent a room? I thought that was what Martin Luther King was all about, Keith.
Look, anybody that believes Patrick Cannon's excuse that he was just calling basically to check about room availability, if you believe that, call me after the show. There's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you, okay? You know, it's obvious. This is a contrast. And let's put it all in context. Cultural Marxism is said to be a mixture of Marx and Freud, and the Freudian aspects are on full display here. Basically, whites in America and Europe have been brainwashed by 60-plus years of liberalism. They have been made to believe that there is something shameful about being white and that they need to make amends. This is called white guilt. This is called political correctness. And you see Kasich responding to it. Then on the other hand, Patrick Cannon, Kasich is a white Republican. Cannon is a black man and undoubtedly a Democrat. If he's a Republican, I stand corrected. But you see that he has no similar sense of you know, guilt. He doesn't feel that he has to make room in his cabinet, I'm sure, for any white people. And basically, when he's in a position of authority, he goes for the jugular. You know, he forgets all about being a public servant and trying to represent all the people of Charlotte, white, black, Hispanic, whatever. He basically takes off the gloves and goes for the jugular and uses his position to intimidate hotel owners and everyone else that he can to give Ameren a hard time. Now, the Republicans never seem to learn about this. John Kasich, you know, it reminds me of J.C. Watts, who was a black University of Oklahoma football quarterback, who was courted and vetted by the Republican Party, served for a number of terms as a U.S. congressman, but then in the last election, when one of his soul brothers, Barack Obama, runs for president as a Democrat, totally forgets that he's a Republican and goes out and endorses very loudly and publicly his brother in race, Barack Obama. You see, all of this, black Republicans are a mirage. They don't exist, really. When it gets down to the same thing with Colin Powell, that's what he did. You know, he was promoted all the way to head of the Joint Chief of Staff in the military because he was the least objectionable black man they could find and promote. But then when Barack Obama runs for president, what does he do? He stabs the Republican Party in the back just like J.C. Watts. So consequently, you know, we've got to understand we're playing checkers and the other side is playing chess, or maybe we're playing chess and they're playing checkers. They're direct. They look at the color of their skin and they compare that to the color of the person that they're running against or is running for president or whatnot. And as I heard a black man on the Memphis radio say one time, when he's got a choice, he'll vote for the brother man rather than the other man. On the other hand, we see whites bending over backwards to reward people that have really nothing to do with the Republican Party or conservative values and promoting them ahead of white people that have toiled long and hard in the vineyard. This happens time and again, and it's very demoralizing. When are white people going to come to their senses, James?
That's a good question. As soon as they listen to an episode of this program, the reawakening will begin. But as the dude said in the Big Lebowski, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous when you're dealing with this situation and with American Renaissance. There's no way we're going to be able to cover everything that has happened with the time that we have available in the program tonight over the course of the past week. Obviously, people know the basics. The American Renaissance Conference has been canceled. There is no meeting in Charlotte, no official meeting. There hasn't even been a video broadcast due to technical difficulties that they ran into with that. They were planning, of course, to still broadcast the speeches from a secure, anonymous location. But even that has run into some problems, so I've read. So we're not going to be able to cover everything. You know, last week what was in play when we were talking about the initial attacks that Ameren was suffering. I have a lot of notes on my desk here at the radio station tonight. It's organized chaos in the studio, as it always is. We're not going to be able to cover it all, but we're going to cover as much as we can. As we mentioned, freedom of speech for conservative whites hangs by a thread. And I'm not talking about, when I say conservative whites, I don't mean people you're going to find on Fox News. I'm talking about real conservatives. I'm not talking about neoconservative jumped up white trash. I'm not talking about establishment conservatives. I'm talking about real paleo conservatives. And the free speech hangs by a thread for these people, as we have found out in back-to-back years with Jared Taylor. Free speech and diversity cannot coexist, no matter what Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck tells you. Any ideas that minorities or perverts or minority perverts find offensive are no longer covered by the First Amendment. And I encourage you to get used to it, because this is the way it's going to be unless we continue to fight this in the court of public opinion. We've written a lot about this on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, if you want to follow sort of a chronological chain of events there. Got to take a break. Going to come back more on the Ameren cancellation right after this.
The Political Cesspool guys, we'll be back right after these messages. Opinion in the Political Cesspool, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Been talking, of course, this first hour about the cancellation of the 2011 American Renaissance Conference. And as we said just before the last break, it's official, folks. It appears that free speech for paleoconservative European Americans is officially a thing of the past. All of the cowardice and groveling, all of the oaths of fealty to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King will get white Republicans nowhere when you're in the crosshairs. And that day for people like John Kasich, Keith, these establishment Republicans who believe that they are somehow absolved from the phony charges of racism, they're going to have a rude awakening, because racists don't have any rights. And when I say racist, people need to understand what the modern day definition of the word means. It no longer means what it used to mean, which is an irrational hatred of someone who was of another race. What racist means in modern day political discourse is white conservative. And to radical minorities, racist simply means white person. It doesn't have to mean a white conservative anymore. It can be just any white person that runs afoul of them. I saw that the Charlotte newspaper ran a very snide editorial, a hate-filled editorial, in which they quote-unquote defended free speech. They called Jared Taylor both a primitive and a racist in the headline of the article, signaling that they believe it's perfectly all right to take away his free speech rights. Labeling someone a racist in today's America is to declare them a non-person who has no rights. They go on to say that it's wrong to silence Jared Taylor, but they don't mean it. They don't really mean it. Then they imply that Jared Taylor, who is a graduate of Yale University, he speaks fluent French and Japanese, is some sort of a cretin. You know, if anyone saw this editorial, and once again, we have it documented at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, this editorial isn't a defense of free speech at all. It's a smear piece, a fig leaf written to maintain the false pretense that the media is the guardian of our liberties. It's also intended to lull conservatives back to sleep. If the paper came right out and said the truth, that they are in favor of shutting down free speech that it doesn't agree with, shutting down speech that it doesn't agree with, even the most dim-witted conservative might get the message, and they don't want that.
You know, imagine calling Jared Taylor primitive. You know, he's the personification of refinement. And, you know, Jared has done his best to basically try to toe the line. For example, the easiest way to get off of the comment board there is to say anything discouraging about Jewish power and influence. But then who jumps right in the middle of this thing to crucify him? Some guy named Leonard Zeskind.
Yeah, he's in Charlotte this week.
Right. You know, he's an ultra-hard leftist. And let me tell you, guess his religiosity. He's not an Episcopalian or a Southern Baptist, folks. See, nobody gains anything by all of these olive branches. John Kasich is not going to gain any black votes by appointing a black to his cabinet. Likewise, Jared's not going to gain any type of dispensation from the left by, you know, making discussions of Jewish power and influence off limits. These people, like John Derbyshire said in an article called Taylorism, they fight on the basis of emotion. This detached, scholarly approach that Jared represents and personifies is alien to them, and you can't get into a street fight with these people fighting by the Marquis de Queensberry rules, James. This is another observation I'd like to make about this. There are certain topics that the left has intentionally moved beyond the pale. These are no longer open to debate. We had an article in the Political Cesspool a couple of months ago about a leftist homosexual activist named Dan Savage, who was commenting about the homosexual rights movement, quote unquote. And what he said was, you know, there was a time in America when there were two sides to the argument about interracial marriage. There were a time when there were two sides to the issue of school racial integration. But that is no longer the case. We're going to make homosexuality the same way. And that's what they've done. And see, Richard Spencer said that he didn't think that the left wing, that the mainstream conservatives had anything to worry about. A guy named Alexander Hart said, they've come for Ameren, now they're going to get you next. But let me say this to Richard. They've already started on the mainstream conservatives. For example, the Family Research Council of James Dobson and the American Family Association of Donald Wildman have now been listed as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center because they dare to challenge left-wing orthodoxy on homosexuality, which is, you know, it's the same as choosing between meat and potatoes. You know, don't knock it till you tried it. It's all the same, and there's nothing wrong with being a homosexual, and we don't care what your Bible says. Your Bible was written by a bunch of dusty Bedouins several millennia ago, so consequently it's no longer appropriate to advanced beings like us. So those people are now in the hate group, and if the left decides, if they mark off any topic like homosexual rights, race, you name it, as being a taboo topic, they will enforce that taboo against anybody. See, that's what is happening here. For example, we have Martin Luther King Day and Black History Month. What that shows you is that now decent people must venerate the civil rights movement and black rights. And if you don't, if you have any questions about that, well, basically, you're a knuckle-dragging troglodyte, as they ridiculously try to style Jared Taylor, you know, the epitome of refinement and propriety.
Keith, you are right on the money once again, and not to digress, but you mentioned how the blueprint for that which the left is trying to do now in shutting down our rights and promoting the latest egalitarian perversity, homosexuality. It was all laid during the so-called civil rights movement, and they are following that blueprint to a T, and they're almost indestructible because the establishment conservatives have now ceded the ground that their original intent was righteous, and you just can't do it because it wasn't. But, you know, yeah, and if people are expecting that they're going to get any sort of resistance from the mainstream Republican Party or establishment conservatives or Fox News, think again, ladies and gentlemen. I just saw another example. Michelle Malkin just did a good piece defending Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A, you know, they're still owned and operated by this 90-year-old Southern Christian, Truett Cathy. And Chick-fil-A is a great organization. Good Christian principles.
Not open on Sunday.
Not open on Sunday. It's a great Christian organization, a great Christian chain. They've been very successful. But and so Michelle Malkin came out with a good piece about Chick-fil-A and their stand against sodomy and their stance against perverted homosexual marriage. But guess who's the latest mainstream conservative, so-called conservative, to jump on the pro-sodomite marriage bandwagon? It's none other than Barbara Bush, not Barbara Bush Sr., if you will, but Barbara Bush, one of the Bush twins, one of the young ladies. She's all for it.
Well, let me tell you, this is what we've been trying to tell people about the Bush family all along. Next to the Kennedy clan, I would say that the Bush clan has been the most destructive force in tearing down traditional America. The Bushes are the Republican mirror image of the Kennedys. They're not conservatives. None of them are. They came from blue state America, from Sissy Bunkport, Maine. And, of course, I've got my tongue in cheek there. It's Kenny Bunkport, Maine, by Skull and Bones. Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush, and then George W. Bush were all members of Skull and Bones. And they're not smart people. You know, I made over 200 points higher on the SAT than George W. Bush did, and I never considered myself Yale or Harvard material, but he gets in. He goes, you know, to Yale and Harvard. He is pushed through. He gets a degree, and he is put up as a front man. There's a reason why people like this are chosen by the elites that control us. If you're down there in his level, you know, and he wasn't the dumbest guy in the race in the year 2000. The actual dumbest guy was Al Gore. He made a 1041 on the SAT, and George Bush made a 1046. You know, and likewise, John Kerry was dumber than either one of them. Why are they picking people like this as presidential timber? The reason is these people basically need someone else to chew their food intellectually. Now, the Bushes, you know, so they need to rely on basically Jewish advisors like Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Douglas Feist to tell them everything, and as a result, they get a biased view. Now, the Bushes are liberals. They always have been. They went to Texas for the same reason a Chinaman went to the United States in the 19th century to make a hatful and come back.
Yeah, they were carpetbaggers all the way. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We're going to wrap up tonight's first hour. There's still two more to come. We're going to wrap up tonight's first hour right after this word.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Moving right along, last segment of the first hour, which means this is our last segment with Keith Alexander for the night. Coming up later in the show, in the second hour, Sheriff Dennis Spruill from Colorado, Bob Whitaker, will be with us during tonight's third hour, and a lot of stuff in between. This hour, of course, we've been talking about the attacks against American Renaissance and its subsequent cancellation. Kevin Slaughter did a good job of putting it all into summation when he wrote, "A group of citizens wanted to pay a hotel to talk to one another. No boycotts, no violence, no engaging the enemy, just talking to one another. Multiple egalitarian interest groups took aggressive steps to stop that from happening. More importantly, two local politicians sought to shut the conference down, violating some of the most fundamental rights accorded to Americans by the Constitution." And Keith, it should also be noted, and I know that there is no double standard here whatsoever, no hypocrisy here, that Patrick Cannon is not only a mere member of the NAACP, he's a member of about five or six other black-only advancement groups.
Well, you know, and the most important thing to remember is that he's also the mayor pro tem of Charlotte. And there's this statute called 42 U.S.C. 1983 that says that it is actionable for anyone to use the color of government or government power to discriminate against anyone else. So consequently, this is the perfect trap that he's walked into if Ameren has the cojones to follow up on it. This is a 1983 violation if there ever was one, and this should be brought in a suit. Now, you know, I've heard people like Greg Johnson say in his post that, "No, I hope they don't do that because then they're liable to discover our through the discovery process and the pretrial phase of the lawsuit, the membership list of Ameren." Well, let me tell you, do you think that would have stopped the Students for Democratic Society or the Yippie Party or any of these other hard left groups of Symbionese Liberation? No, not at all. In fact, you know, that bringing a lawsuit under a law that has obviously been violated is beyond the pale. Then basically the conservative movement is totally feckless. You know, that means totally ineffective. There's just no way that you can win. You can't win a guerrilla war fighting by the Marquis de Queensberry rules, and you're going to have to fight them on their own turf and on their own terms. And a lawsuit is a way to do that. Now, you know, a guy like Patrick Cannon is doing what comes naturally. He's totally instinctive. You know, the brain doesn't kick in you know, until long after the muscle memory comes, you know, swings into action with a guy like that. So he's really walked into it on this, and we'll see what happens from that. Now, the problem is this. The founding stock of America is apparently low man on the totem pole in America today. You wouldn't dare try to pull something like this against an Hispanic group or a black group or a gay group. If they did, the New York Times would be all over it, NBC, CBS, NBC would be all over it, CNN, and even Fox News would be all over it. We'd hear Bill O'Reilly proving what a sweet-natured guy he is and how fair-minded he is. He'd be calling for the head of Patrick Cannon on a pike if the roles were reversed. Now, we've got to be, you know, we've got the First Amendment rights of assembly, of association, and of speech that were all violated here. And it's a perfect 1983 action. You know, I really want to see if somebody has the cojones to bring this and to move forward on this. You know, you can't lead a movement. You know, I've heard, you know, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. I've never heard it said that you shall know half the truth and that will set you free. We've got to be have the courage of our convictions and move forward on this. This is an outrageous example of the deprivation of constitutional rights. And quite frankly, it doesn't need to go unaddressed, James.
Well, what have we learned? What have we learned here as a result of American Renaissance? First of all, by the way, there was an AMRIN shadow conference heard today, a coalition of the willing. I think I got a report that there was 12 people there. Canadian free speech leader Paul Fromm was there. So basically a group of people who were determined to go to Charlotte and meet with whoever else was still determined to go to Charlotte got together, and good for them. Good for them. You know, that's the kind of the faithful remnant. That's right, Keith. That's the indomitable spirit that we like around here. We don't know when or if the video of the speakers' speeches will be available by NPI TV. Richard Spencer, the ever faithful Richard Spencer, is working on that. I'm sure it will get done. They just ran into video difficulties today on top of everything else that has happened. But what have we learned? As Richard Spencer, our good friend who was on the show last week, has written, I'll just touch on a couple of these. What a conference like AMRIN offers a hotel chain financially is no match against political pressure and the politically correct police. The Sheraton Hotel in Charlotte forewent some $50,000 in accommodation fees, meals, and drinks after an elected official applied rather mild pressure and some Antifa scum started blogging. Antifa meaning anti-fascist, as if old-fashioned conservative people are fascist. Yes, indeed. What else have we learned? We can't use public facilities. We don't have freedom of speech. We don't have the right to rent a room. We don't have the right to have our conference, our contract honored. We don't have the right to peacefully assemble. We are not part of a polite society. I heard some people claim that Charlotte would be a good venue because it's a southern city and it's outside the Beltway. Well, the fact is the place is filled with New York liberals, New South liberals, I should say, cowardly corporate drones, B-grade Obamas like Patrick Cannon, and churchy suburbanites whose greatest fear in life is rocking the boat or being associated with someone or something that the local newspaper considers to be extreme. We need to understand that we are functionally heretics in contemporary America. And we need to start expecting corporations not to deal with us honestly. If we ever do anything with a private facility again, we must be absolutely certain that the hotel is either on our side and totally committing to hold the conference. We must know the management personally. Finding an independent hotel would be key in this regard. Sheraton, of course, was a global chain. And needless to say, the boys in corporate HQ are quite willing to forfeit $50,000 if that means keeping up politically correct appearances, Keith.
You know, Charlotte was a particularly bad choice, okay? If you want to find the most liberal place in the South, you find that. And see, that's, again, Jared following his instincts. You know, he likes Blue State America. Blue State America is not your home. Let me tell you, let me brag on my cohort here, James, for a while. He had a person that has an even more toxic reputation to the mainstream media, and he made sure that that conference went through the Euro conference in 2008. They ran into the same problems, but the old street fighter, James Edwards, got in there. He found a venue. He knew how to handle it, and the thing went off basically without a hitch, despite all the primary, you know, at first, trying to do things, you know, according to the Marquis de Queensberry's rules didn't work, but James found a way to do it. And this is what we've got to do if we want to prevail. You know, I'm not interested in being what Dabney called a modern conservative. I remember we ran this on the Post long ago. Dabney at the time was talking about women's suffrage, and he said that women's suffrage will undoubtedly become the law of the land, not because of its merits, but because of the weakness of its primary opponent, modern conservatism. Modern conservatism wants it to be known that they don't want to be a martyr. They have no interest in that, and they're basically like a sparring partner to just exist for the fact, for the purpose of keeping the opposition in shape. He said, after women's suffrage becomes the law of the land, he was writing, I think, in the 1870s about this, modern conservatism will plume itself and say that if it weren't for their stalwart efforts, that they, the public would have been subjected to the even greater evil of baby suffrage. And if and when baby suffrage becomes a reality, then modern conservatism will plume itself with glory for protecting the public from the even greater evil of animal suffrage. So, see, this is what is happening time and again. We've got to find a place to stand and fight on these issues. You know, we can't. There are taboo topics. What we're going to have to do, we're going to have to continue to fight because the left basically will do anything. They want to ruin your livelihood, and they're now passing things like hate speech and hate crimes. So they're going to be putting people in jail if you don't stop them now.
Want to thank Keith Alexander for his intellect and wisdom during this hour, as always. He'll be back next week during the first hour. And, folks, let this be our parting thought for this hour's topic. Support Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor has had 20 years of excellent decision-making that has made American Renaissance what it is. He ran into unexpected difficulties. You can't win every time. Support Jared Taylor by taking out a subscription to American Renaissance magazine. We'll continue to fight on. You know that. Stay tuned for the second hour. It's coming up right after this.
Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival. That broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.